Hello and welcome back. We're here again in the Moscone Center. This is Build 2016, and I have with me a bunch of wonderful guests. We're going to talk about ASP.NET.
Oh, yeah.
So why don't we introduce ourselves here, and then remember, we want your questions, so if you have any questions, send them in now. All of your ASP.NET questions. I'm going to get them all over here. We're going to just answer as many as we can. This is like the community stand-up that we kind of had to cancel the other day, right? So let's start over here, Matt.
Yeah, my name is Matt Christensen, and I work on the Visual Studio tooling for ASP.NET. So everything from Razor and project system stuff and the new NPM, Grunt, and Gulp integration, that is all part of sort of the new tooling experience with ASP.NET 5, or ASP.NET Core, sorry.
Nice.
I work on that.
Awesome, so we'll call you Tools.
Right.
Tools, nice.
So I'm John Galloway. I'm in the developer experience team, and I work on a lot of things helping to help developers keep up with what's going on, get started, point them at the right documentation, build labs and stuff like that. I consider myself like a huge ASP.NET groupie. I'm like captain of the fan club.
Is there t-shirts or anything?
I'll work on it. Get me a budget.
We consider him part of the team, honestly.
Yes.
He doesn't report to us, but he's part of the team.
Absolutely.
So I'm Scott Hunter, and I am the program manager at Microsoft on the .NET platform and the Visual Studio tooling for the .NET platform.
We'll get back to that later, because that was different than the last time we spoke, so we'll get back to that later.
Yeah, right. But I worked on the ASP.NET team for, 7, 8 years.
Forever. So, I mean, since ASP came out in 1962, right, you've been working on it. All right, go ahead.
I think I was born then.
I'm Dan Roth. I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET team. I work on ASP.NET Core and ASP.NET Core MVC specifically.
So notice that you have sort of a wider range of, so that's why I'm telling you, ask your questions, because we have tooling, we have community, we have the guy in charge, and then we have the guy that works on ASP.NET Core. And so we're ready for questions. So let's start with this. There was a little bit of a change in your responsibilities at Microsoft. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and how that's sort of going to push how ASP.NET is going to be in the future?
The biggest change was a lot of folks didn't realize this, but the ASP.NET team was not part of the .NET team since 2010. Uh-huh. When Scott Guthrie went off to go start working on the Azure cloud, he took all the web components with him. And so he took the visual web developer team, he took the ASP.NET team, and we were over there focusing on still building a great ASP.NET product, but making sure it also worked great with the Azure cloud. And a couple months ago, we decided to fold the two teams back together again, and so there's now one whole .NET team, which is responsible for .NET on desktop, .NET on UWP, .NET on web, ASP.NET, all back into one single team.
So from a community perspective, what does that mean for people that are going to be using ASP.NET? Is it a good thing, not bad? What's going on? Well, he's like,
I'm not sure how community that fits in. I mean, hopefully it's kind of transparent,
it
right?
It shouldn't change a lot, actually.
Yeah. Right. But it's good that now .NET and ASP.NET they're all same page.
Right.
You know, maybe that, as far as, like we do things with like a community stand-up. We both have community stand-ups. Maybe we'll coordinate a bit more. But I think generally we try and just be open and outward facing as much as possible. So
if I was going to say anything about that merge, if you look at the ASP.NET product like last summer, it had this concept of what we call DNX.
Yes.
.NET execution framework.
Yeah.
That framework was more oriented towards web workloads. And so one of the reasons we wanted to merge the teams back together is we wanted to look at .NET holistically and say that DNX concept we've now folded into what we call the .NET CLI, which is a single concept for building console applications, web applications. And so DNX was flavored too much towards web.
I see.
And so we brought this back, so a lot of those DNX concepts now can be applicable to class libraries, console applications, future workloads that we put on .NET Core. And so that's something the community will see as part of this, and that's also why, if our last release was in November of last year, and people are like, where's the new bits?
Yeah.
It's why we've been trying to merge these concepts back together into a single unified concept. And so, what we call DNX and DNU and all these commands have now been replaced by a single command called .NET.
Yeah, and before I remember, because I was trying to move some libraries that I had built over to the .NET Core, and I wanted them to work in ASP.NET as well, and I found that there was this weird disconnect between DNX and .NET, because
right.
I could .NET something, and I could DNX something, and they were two different things, but now they're going to be the same thing.
Exactly.
That's awesome. All right, so the questions are pouring in. ASP.NET Core 1 versus traditional ASP.NET. Elevator pitch, let's do this. Let's start with you, bud.
Yeah, sure. So ASP.NET Core, obviously that's the new thing. It's built on top of .NET Core. It's on top of the new stack that's cross-platform. Mm-hmm. So if you want to run on Windows, you want to run on Linux, you want to run on a Mac, that's what you can do with ASP.NET Core. It's gone all in on everything being packages, being NuGet packages. You can pull in as many packages as you want into your app, and it's very really pay-per-play that way. If you don't want it, you don't use it. Whereas the .NET framework, it's got everything there already, but you also have everything there, and you get it all, or you don't get it at all.
Right.
That has its own benefits. It's a very mature framework. It's got over a decade worth of maturity behind ASP.NET 4.6 and the web forms and that ecosystem. ASP.NET Core, it's a newer ecosystem, so you're going to be dealing with a smaller ecosystem initially, but we expect that to grow really fast due to the nice benefits.
I like the way you didn't answer it, like say, you have to move all your stuff over right now. It felt like, here's the good parts here, here's the good parts here. You were going to say something?
Yeah, there's some more good parts too. One of the big things that customers always tell me is, I want to use the latest version of ASP.NET, but I can't get .NET 4.6.3 or 4.6.2 on my machine. What do I do?
Right.
One of the key benefits of .NET Core and ASP.NET Core is you can actually ship the framework as part of the application, or we have another model where you can actually put frameworks on the machine side by side by side by side, which you can't do with .NET Framework today. And so one of the benefits is if you want the newest bits as soon as possible and not break other applications on the server, you can do that. Performance is something else. So we've super optimized the performance in .NET Core and ASP.NET Core.
Well, we saw that in that demo. That was crazy.
Massive on-play, that game, Age of Ascent, seeing that performance they're pulling off of that thing. But if you look at the numbers, an MVC application running on ASP.NET Core runs 10 times faster than an MVC application that we had before. And that's not a dish against .NET Framework or .NET Core. A lot of these are, we fundamentally changed the platform.
Right.
So the amount of memory we allocate per request and stuff like that is reduced quite a bit. So I would say it's, what Dan was saying, it's built on packages, it's cross-platform. You can install it side by side on the machine. You can install it inside of your application. Other things that I think are key highlights are, we have a new feature called Tag Helpers, which makes your HTML look like HTML again. It doesn't look like you mixed C# and HTML together. I think there's a huge benefits there. We've taken things like dependency injection. We've flowed them all the way through the entire system. So even into Razor pages, you can actually dependency inject classes into
Razor
pages.
Yeah, I saw that.
Really cool. So there's a variety of benefits across the board. If you're a .NET Framework customer, also realize you can take an ASP.NET Core application and target it against the .NET Framework or against .NET Core. So you get the best of both worlds. It's really just the next iteration of ASP.NET. The reason we put a 1.0 on it was it's different.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a perfect continuation because things change. Reducing that memory allocation means that I had to change structures and remove methods and stuff like that. And so we thought that was important as part of the platform. So that's my elevator pitch.
I love it. Now, let's just say I'm a traditional ASP.NET dev, and I love living in Visual Studio, and you're saying there's a clean break. Am I going to lose my tooling, Mads? Nod. Let's see what we got.
No, you're not. And in a lot of cases, you actually get a lot of new stuff that we haven't been able to do before, really. So what this new model with the cross-plat and all these different things and NuGet packages, so one of the things is that all the different components on our NuGet packages, it adds a different layer of granularity that we've never had the ability to work with for the web project in Visual Studio before. So a lot of interesting things are going to happen. What you've seen so far, what was released in November, was the first wave, which is we have to make sure everything works with ASP.NET Core, right? So that you're going to see a lot of things that are lighting up, the same features as you were used to, such as scaffolding of controllers and views and those sort of things. But more things will come as we close in on the RTW release.
And you've got a bunch of open source stuff as well.
Oh yeah, a bunch of open source extensions especially, that really adds that additional layer on top of the Visual Studio Web Developer experience. And a lot of it is very unique to Visual Studio, really. You won't really find this in a lot of other places. A lot of times we see that you want to use the command line tools, Node.js, NPM, Bower, Gulp, and all these different command line tools to do certain things with your workflow, such as bundling and minification or compiling TypeScript and lists and SAS files and so on. And it requires a certain tool chain. And a lot of people like that, and that's great. But a lot of people prefer sort of the more automatic approach where they don't have to install Node.js. They don't have to write gulp file and all these sort of things. And things just light up. And it does what you think it does, right? You can right-click a list file and say, compile this to a CSS file. Right. Or you can run JS hint. It just runs automatically, right? So we're that's coming soon. We're working on that. So you have the web linters are coming. So TSLint for TypeScript, ESLint for JavaScript, CSSLint for CSS, and CoffeeLint for CoffeeScript. And we're going to add more as we go along.
That's interesting. So it, in response then, it's like, no, you're still going to get all the same good tooling, mm-hmm. and we're adding more for both. For
right.
both if you're on full core, full.NET
right.
or .NET Core.
Right.
That's
just,
awesome.
It's just web tooling.
It's just web tooling. So it doesn't really matter. So a lot of this web tooling would work with anything. It doesn't have to be, it's not ASP.NET specific, actually, a lot of it.
Oh, even
but
better.
It would work with anything.
Yeah. That's awesome. It feels like we're really opening the door. If you like doing this, just do this. Do whatever it is that you like.
You know, right. that's I like to tell people that. Like, they'll say, what's the catch or whatever? And I try and explain it. Like, look, if you're an application developer, all the stuff you're used to doing, the MVC pattern, like, that stuff all still works. But if you want, like, a lot of things that used to bug me, like I wish I could do this or whatever, that's all opened up now. So there's so many little sleeper features in there, like localization, logging, you know, everywhere you look, there's like, oh, they fixed that now. And so there's so many, like, this was a great opportunity to kind of dig in and just fix. I mean, whenever I speak overseas, developers are always asking me about localization. I've been always bugging the team, like, can you please, and now it's here, and I'm like so excited.
For about 5 years.
Yeah, it's true. And so I was so excited, and I, you know, it's one of many features that are like under the radar. So it's, there's so many new things, but the app model you're used to, like that all still works. The tooling, that still works. It's a good kind of balance.
Got it, I love it. Here, let's go to some more questions. Andre Young, what is the status of SignalR? With ASP.NET Core, everyone's like, okay.
SignalR is coming. Uh-huh. It's going to be there. It's not planned for this first version. We had started working on it. There's a repo that's already set up on GitHub where we started work on it. We absolutely plan to have it for, you know, given the scope of the project that was already
sure.
massive in terms of what the things we were trying to do. It did get pushed out of V1, but it is coming. We will do SignalR for ASP.NET
That's
Core.
Also why we made it a 1.0.
Yeah,
because we're trying to show that it doesn't have. If it was a 5.0, it would feel like it's going to have a continuation of all the things we already had.
Yeah,
we're starting over in some ways, and so we don't have SignalR, we don't have web pages. There's a couple other features that'll be missing. All of it will come. We'll RTM first, as Dan said, with just MVC. But you can expect probably within 6 months, you'll start seeing the other frameworks show up.
Awesome. Next question. At this point. What are the limitations of ASP.NET Core 1.0 versus traditional ASP.NET? Because obviously, there's probably things not in Core that are in the other framework. What should we be expecting?
We were already just talking about some of those things. So SignalR is not there yet. If you have a large web forms application, that's not something you probably would just up and move to ASP.NET Core because there is no web forms in the ASP.NET
sure.
Core world. Specifically, if you want to target .NET Core, .NET Core is a subset of the API surface area that's available to you in the full .NET framework. And if you need API surface area that's just not available yet in .NET Core, that could be a limitation. But most of the stuff is there, and we keep adding new APIs. New APIs show up regularly. That's the nice thing about having this package-based model. We can ship new features and new functionality at a really fast rate to fill in those gaps and make the platform more mature. ASP.NET has, you know, over a decade worth of community and ecosystem around it. It's going to take a little time to build that up, but we have a nice agile system where we can fill things pretty quickly.
So we talked about what's not in .NET Core versus what's in regular full framework. What's in .NET Core that's new that maybe people have not experienced yet?
Well, I mean, there's the characteristics of .NET Core first. Like, one of the things I really love about .NET Core is you can run .NET Core in constrained environments that you could never run the full .NET framework in today. Like,
sure.
for example, if you look at NanoServer. NanoServer is a new SKU of Windows Server. It's only 300 megabytes. Like, .NET framework, I think, is like at least a gig of stuff. If you like take it all, including its NGen images,
right.
you couldn't fit the .NET framework in NanoServer. But .NET Core runs no problem. It's great. You get the side-by-side versioning that Hunter was mentioning previously. Your app can be completely self-contained. It can literally bring the CLR with it that you want to run on, and nothing else on the machine will affect that application. So it could be completely on its own. In the future, we actually want to do some really cool stuff with like integration with .NET Native, where you can then take that app and run it through the compilers to compile it way down to a nice optimized package. We have blazingly fast startup times. That's not a V1 feature, but it's on the roadmap of stuff that we can do with the .NET Core ecosystem.
All right.
Talk about ASP.NET, though.
Jira's got tag
helpers. The authentication and authorization
new configuration
stuff is new with policies is really cool.
There's lots of new ASP.NET stuff in there as well.
There's tons of new async views in Razor, the ability to do flesh points. There's a lot of really awesome stuff in ASP.NET Core.
Cool. I love it. All right, next question. How is building real-time apps with ASP.NET Core compared to Node.js? Since ASP.NET Core claims to be faster than Node.js, I guess they're looking at real-time apps with .NET, ASP.NET Core. Is there such a thing?
Yeah,
I would look at that game you saw this morning.
I know, right?
I was going to say, the premier example of that today is Age of Ascents, which is using WebSockets. There's not using SignalR at this point because we don't have one. But how many requests a second was he handling on that?
Yeah,
on that
demo this morning? Not only that, but the cool thing is when you coupled it with Service Fabric, mm-hmm. like, I love how you had both screens up there to show that there was no like, hold on, we'll be right back, you know, hang out a little sign. We're cleaning the windows, right? There was nothing like that at all. It was literally the thing went in, didn't work, it was pulled out, and there was no sort of breakup of that at all.
And also, we don't claim to be faster, so if you wait till our RTM, when our RTM is done, our bits will be up in the Tech and Power benchmark itself. And you'll be able to see us side by side with all the other frameworks. So,
and are we discouraging people from using Node.js? I don't know if that's what our goal is either. I mean,
even inside of ASP.NET, we're not going to discourage it. So we have Steve Sanderson on our team, mm-hmm. who is finding ways to make it where you can build apps with Angular and React really good with ASP.NET. In some of those cases, you need to run a little bit of JavaScript on the server. And so we actually have some prototype bits where, as part of your ASP.NET application, you're also running Node.js side by side with it. To satisfy some of that, because we have to run some JavaScript on the server.
That's crazy town.
So we're...
Next thing you know, we're going to be putting Bash on Windows.
It's open web, man.
Crazy time.
Open web.
All right. Well, from Todd, will ResX localize string and thus compile time checks be first class with the new middleware approach?
Oh, we should talk about the globalization feature and how it compares to...
You know, I forget actually the ResX thing specifically.
So ResX is part of the localization
story. It's already there.
Yeah. I think the tooling was still a gap when we were implementing it, but that was coming online as well. I don't actually know if the tooling is lighting up for the upcoming release, but it's certainly planned. Like, you'll be able to use ResX files. Actually, one of the cool things about the new localization system is in addition to the standard ResX system, you'll be able to use other localization formats that you want to use. Like, there's other localization stories that you might use on a Linux box that might be interesting for
like
an ASP.NET Core.
PO file.
But there is first-class support in Razor mm-hmm. for localization.
Well, in your view, you can very easily localize.
That's what I'm saying. When I look at the question, I think of before I had to go and just write resource into my web application. Now you've got Razor that you guys have worked on that does all this. Can you describe that?
There's a nice support in Razor for a Vue localizer service. Like we mentioned, the integration of dependency injection throughout the system. Mm-hmm. The localization services in ASP.NET Core are available to your Vues. They're available to your controllers. So you can add a iView localizer service, I think is what it's called, into your Razor view, and then you can just ask for the corresponding strings in your Razor view, and you're good to go.
Is this something you put in middleware that says this is the right language and it injects it?
You don't even have to.
The middleware is what will set the culture. You want to say like what language do you actually want to render out?
Got it.
And there is a piece of middleware that will handle that. But then throughout your code, in order to make it localizable, you use the various localization services.
So some things as a developer that are great with it. So like for instance, the view, you can have a view that's based by name. So I just create different views with different names is one thing. Another thing that I like about the way they set
name, like language name.
A language name, exactly. Like, so the culture.
Like contact-enus or something.
Exactly. And you can also do, the way that you're doing the ResX, or the strings, you can do it just by bracket, and you put in the whatever your native language is. So say English. So I would say, welcome to my homepage in quotes and brackets. And then that's automatically going to detect that and inject the right one. So I don't need to always be depending on tooling to go and look up what was that weird string. You know what I mean? I can read my code and it looks like normal code.
And the web page actually is readable as well.
Yeah, exactly.
The important thing was that in the design was to make sure that if you wrote the web page in English, you could actually still see the English.
Mm-hmm. If you wrote a localized app before, it was there might be no text at all.
There was like this weird like localization.get resource, and then there was some funky string that you put into this static class that had all these const string. Yeah. I mean, it's just ugly.
So terrible. The idea is write your text as you would, put some stuff around it, and then we'll at runtime go and see what the culture of the browser request is and do a switch for you.
And it's hugely pluggable. So people are doing things like pulling resources out of, you know, services or out of database or whatever.
Database is always a popular one if you wanted to do.
So it's not just ResX stuff. You can do all sorts of crazy cool stuff.
Whatever you want.
But for ResX, so the model has always worked in Visual Studio where it automatically would create like a C# file, so you had that strongly typed nature that the question was about. Mm-hmm. And so that relied on something called a single file generator, and we have now implemented that. So it's, again, it's one of those things that we have to get things on par to work with ASP.NET Core. We now have that, so now the door is open for us to do the ResX file generator. So,
love it. Yep. Well, we have only about 15 minutes left, so please keep your questions coming. They're very good. What are your favorite code editors now with .NET and ASP.NET Core? Well, I'm biased to Visual Studio. I mean,
Visual Studio code's pretty good.
Yeah, it is.
It's pretty light. Like they have the new C# extension that's going out, and it'll light up the new .NET Core support as well. It's pretty cool.
In the RC2 timeframe, the VS Code support will include debugging as well.
Oh.
So you'll actually be able to do debugging in VS Code with ASP.NET Core. I know Mads is, from the tooling side, Mads is going to look at some of the tooling he's doing for Visual Studio and seeing if he should do that for VS Code as well.
Right. But to answer the question, to me, it's Visual Studio.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
This is house, right?
Hey, I'm home. In Visual Studio, open it, I'm home.
It's you like know? Literally he has scaffolding around Visual Studio all the time. Like, I'm going to just hammer this in, and you're asking him which one he's going to use.
You should use whatever editor makes you happy. Well, like, that's the point.
That is a good point, right? That the tooling is like the OmniSharp is pluggable wherever. So you can get, you know, IntelliSense and things in other browsers.
We have devs that are using Vim and Emacs to do their ASP.NET Core development, and that's totally cool.
It's still the best way to generate a random string. Give someone Vim and tell them to exit.
And there's actually a really interesting thing that happened with Visual Studio here in Visual Studio 2015, and that is it's much easier now to have a team where you have some people maybe on a Mac, you know, in Sublime Text or whatever, can work on an ASP.NET Core project that will work and light up in Visual Studio, completely seamless, right? So if you're happy with your Mac and, you know, Emacs or Sublime, and use your command line tools to do NPM and Bower and all that, if you then use Visual Studio, all that still works, but we kind of wrap it inside that nice Visual Studio UI. So you don't have to use the command line. Visual Studio can do a lot of automation for you, but at the end of the day, it just does exactly the same thing. It proxies into the command line. So it's the same commands that are being executed on Node.js and so on behind the scenes.
Got it.
So now it's very seamless, and we're very excited about that.
That's cool. All right, next question. Profiling for what ASP.NET website project, profiling. How do you do profiling in ASP.NET Core for either of them? Profiling, are we doing anything there? It says Core and ASP.NET. What are we doing there for profiling?
Profiling is post RTM.
Okay. You will know.
He was looking uncomfortable, so I'm going to just like. She's
like, my boss is here.
He's like, the team's working on it.
We care about it, but it's not something that's going to make the RTM.
It feels like we need to bake this thing. We want to have like this really nice pie at the end, and then we're going to start to add all the garnishes, right?
Yeah, so one of the things that the team's going to do, as soon as we ship the RTM, we're going to go to the GitHub page where our schedule is, and we're going to start listing at which milestones you'll see more stuff come in. So we're not going to. We don't want to do this black box style. We're going to do it very open. So if you come and look at ASP.NET Core 1 and go, oh, this is missing, hopefully we'll have a website that tells you when it's coming.
Right.
And that's something we'll do as soon as we actually lock down for RTM. We'll put that site up. And customers will be able to go there and say, hey, I don't have the same scaffolding I have in ASP.NET 4X. When's that coming? Oh, September. Great.
Right.
There are some good API support things that have been added in to make it so that you can understand what's going on in your code better. So for instance, Glimpse. And Glimpse V2, they've been baking that in, and they're calling directly into those APIs that are giving you a lot of information about it.
And then you have that new diagnostic source stuff that you can look into that might be able to help with that kind of profile. All right, next question. As I'm playing around with ASP.NET Core, it sounds that the web API application doesn't come with built-in security.
What's the reason for that?
Yeah.
Why is that? So there are pieces of the Web API security story that are in ASP.NET Core. Like we have middleware that can read and parse bearer tokens that come in, validate them, and produce an identity on the thread. That part is there. The part that's missing is the token issuance. Like we used to have an authorization server middleware piece that could issue tokens for your application. And that's a very security critical piece of code.
Yeah.
We kind of gave you a little bit of the story, and you had to fill in a lot of the gaps to make it really hard and to make it a real authorization server. We have decided not to to port that authorization server middleware forward. Instead, we've been partnering with the community. The guys that work on, there's a third-party open source project called Identity Server.
Dominic
and Brock.
Of course.
And they have been porting Identity Server to ASP.NET Core. Identity Server 4 is the version of the product that supports this. And they have a great story around token issuance. That's what we would recommend people take a look at and use for their ASP.NET Core projects.
And they're good guys. I know them.
They know their security
stuff. They know their stuff. It's like security you don't want to mess with. Like, hey, let's just slap this together this weekend. That's not something you do.
And I think it's just a good example of, you know, there's something in the community that's there. It's working. The community's using. It's high quality. Let's get behind it and let people use it as opposed to trying to build something completely new.
We never were able to finish or go far enough in 4X on this area. And that's why we said it, you know, it's... As Dan said, there's a community solution. Let's use it. Let's embrace those guys.
Love it. All right, next. How painful would a migration from WebAPI 4.6 to ASP.NET Core be? It would be really cool if we could have a tool to analyze the code and say, here's a list of known problems.
It would be cool. The make ASP.NET Core button, right?
No, there actually is something called the .NET Portability Analyzer, isn't there?
So what that tool will do is if you want to port specifically to .NET Core, which is a slightly different API surface area, it will tell you what APIs you're using in your app that are available on .NET Core and which ones aren't. So you'll run that tool on your code and it'll say, you know, 80%, 90% of your stuff, that it'll just work the same way it always did.
Sure.
You got this 10, 15, 20% of your code that needs to change a little bit, and it'll tell you like you should use this API instead.
Right.
That's available for a .NET Core port. For porting your web API code to ASP.NET Core, that's actually fairly straightforward. We did do a merge of MVC and web API to make them one consistent programming model, so there are some changes. But for the most part, you have an API controller, you have actions, you use attribute routing, you return types, you have formatters. That code is mostly the same, and is fairly straightforward to write. If you really want to just take your web API code and not have to touch it like at all, we do have a web API compat shim package, which will really like facade the MVC support in ASP.NET Core and make it look almost exactly like ASP.NET Web API looked like. And so that can make it really easy to port. But we think most people will like the new merged model as opposed to trying to keep their Web API code exactly the same.
Got it. All right, choice. Next question. Microsoft pushes OData on services like Office 365. Ben loves it. Why is OData not part of the current roadmap on ASP? Man, they are grilling you today, bud. Everyone's like...
So the OData actually is a work in progress. There's a separate OData team that actually works on the OData services.
Okay. Oh.
And they
this
have
the other devs, man. It's the other devs. That's all I always say.
Man,
Jim's working on that. I don't know. He's been on vacation for 2 months.
So they had initial previews out of the OData support for ASP.NET Core. So it is a work. It's not. I don't believe it's actually coming with the V1 release. But as the R bits stabilize and their bits can stabilize, and they can push out the ASP.NET Core support as well. So it is coming. It is planned. It's just not done.
When you're talking about like baking these things, it feels like there's like 10 pies in 5 different ovens. You know, at different temperatures.
I think we were talking about the number of packages in like just ASP.NET Core that they have to push around, and it's something like 400 different NuGet packages that are dealing with there. So it's a lot of stuff. It's a big project.
Yeah.
It's coming together.
The big thing is we just have to ship .NET Core and stabilize the platform so the community can build on top of it. That's really the big thing today, is just getting there as fast as we can. So we're trying to do that.
I've been amazed at this conference. I talked to people over at the ASP.NET Core booth and asked them, you know, are you using ASP.NET Core? What do you think? And I've had tons of people, they're saying, I'm using ASP.NET Core today, I'm using RC1 bits, I'm using it in production right now, and I'm loving it. So
nice.
There's stuff that you can use right now, and a lot of the pies are already baked, I guess is what I would say.
All right, so here it is. Hi, everyone. Greetings from Bosnia. I am new to ASP.NET and up really late, apparently. And my question is, should I learn traditional ASP.NET MVC first, or go with ASP.NET Core, or is it the same paradigm?
They're basically the same.
They're
very similar.
Whatever you learn from ASP.NET MVC today will map into the ASP.NET MVC that sits inside of Core.
You should feel very comfortable.
If you want RTM tooling and RTM frameworks and stuff like that, use the current MVC. If you want to be bleeding edge, use the new one.
Got it. And the tooling, like you said, will work on either.
It just works.
Nice. We should have a t-shirt for him. It just works, yes.
You should take a look at our docs. docs.asp.net, and yeah. you can learn all about what is different in MVC, like the new features that he can start using, or she.
Awesome. So next question, when can I remotely debug a .NET Core server app running inside a Docker container on a Linux machine? Good news.
So we're going to show that today at 3:30. So. There's
3:30 is the answer to the question. So,
exactly. Well, actually,
the question would be when is the customer going to be able to see those bits? So we're showing a couple demos later today. There's a .NET session and an ASP.NET session, and we'll show a little bit of that in both of those. When the RC2 bits come out in the next few weeks, you'll be able to remotely debug from Visual Studio into a Linux container.
I love it. I mean, you're like, today at 3:30, can we be more specific than that? I love it. Let's see, when developing a web app on ASP.NET Core RC1, when RC2 is released, is or will there be breaking changes to our web app? He's like, well, let's put it to you softly.
Yes. Well, I mean, one of the things we do is we have an announcements repo on GitHub where every time we make any breaking change, anything that's dramatically different, we post an announcement there to tell everyone what the changes are that have already happened, because people are using our dev builds and they want to know as soon as those changes are made.
Sure.
So you can read through the announcements and find out the changes. Obviously, the big change is that DNX is going away and we're replacing it with a new shiny .NET Core bits. That's,
so the
that's
tool
the
chain
change.
Changes, the, mainly the tool chain changes.
Yeah,
but then sort of the APIs, it's all the same.
Most of
but it's also your
core.
Packages, right? I mean, there's package.
There's a namespace change that went along with the rename. So, you know, instead of Microsoft ASP.NET, it's like Microsoft ASP.NET Core. But that's fairly mechanical change. Your code, pretty much the same, not much changes there. The things that change are more in like the project JSON and lower level. Like instead of typing DNX blah, you'll be typing .NET blah. And
love it. Will there be a 32-bit .NET Core for Linux?
So right now we're not working on that. A version of .NET Core that runs on 32-bit Linux. But once again, it would just depend on demand. If there's a demand for that, we would consider that.
Sure. And then Alan, any word on a date for RC2?
We're working very hard on it.
Yeah, I love how I should have every guest come with their boss and just be like, what are you saying about that? I think we really just came to make you nervous. That's what the whole show is about.
We are trying to get the RC2 bits out as soon as we possibly
come on, give
can.
Give him a day, Dan.
You know.
Give him a day. Come on. Rib him. He's like, no.
We're trying really hard for the month of April.
Okay.
Yeah.
When will the AJAX HTML helpers on ASP.NET Core be available? Is that something you want to? Is that a community thing?
So we have the AJAX helpers. We didn't feel like they're really an appropriate addition to the new stack. If people feel strong, we have had some a few asks on them. If people feel strongly about it, we would listen to that customer feedback and just tell us on GitHub. We'll take
a
look.
And the other thing is, since tag helpers are pretty easy to write, I mean, I would be shocked if someone hasn't already written tag helpers to do that. But you could also do that. So
I mean,
we plan to build some different ones. We plan to build some. We're looking at building tag helpers post RTM for things like React and for AngularJS. Mm-hmm. That's something that I really feel strong that we should do. So,
all right, here's a long one. Since Daniel Roth is at the table, he used to be with the website. This is a novel, dude. I'll let you soak that one in.
Might be a different Daniel Roth.
Any plans for supporting GDI Plus on Azure App Services, web apps, things like generating PDF? I don't think we can answer that. Do you know anything about GDI Plus on Azure?
So the real question here is, when you're running in Azure web apps, you're running in a sandboxed version of Windows, and they control the APIs that you can actually call from your application. And so there is some subset of GDI Plus today that you can call, so you can do like basic things like image resizing. I'm going to guess this customer's run into some of the APIs that you cannot call.
Yeah.
Moving forward, the best solution would be, and I think this will probably happen as part of the ASP.NET Core wave. Obviously, ASP.NET Core is not going to have GDI Plus at all.
No.
Because .NET Core is not going to have those libraries. And so hopefully in the future, we'll have graphic libraries in .NET Core that provide you these capabilities without requiring the operating system to be involved to do this stuff, meaning that you could use these APIs both in existing ASP.NET and in ASP.NET Core in web apps.
Got it. All right, so Nico, the CLI commands or the command line interface commands, .NET, et cetera, will be used for Visual Studio. Will also the CLI commands be used for ASP.NET Core? What are those new, like, as we make the shift from DNX, DNU to just .NET, Can you provide sort of a mapping?
It's pretty straightforward mapping. If you did DNU restore before, you now do .NET restore. If you did, DNU web was what you probably typed, DNX web was what you typed before, now you're just running .NET run or running .NET in the name of the assembly that you want to execute. So the mapping is actually almost directly one-to-one for a lot of cases. There are some cool new things, like being able to have a runtime that's already installed on the machine and have your app just use the existing runtime, like in a shared hosting environment. That's where you like just pass the assembly to the .NET runner and it'll just run your application using the installed .NET runtime. But the mapping is actually kind of what you expect. DNU publish was what was before, .NET publish is the new command. It's pretty close to one-on-one.
It's even simpler because it used to be three or four commands. Now there's only one command. .NET replaces all the other commands.
Okay. Okay, pretty good. From Martin, what's the status of every time? And strong naming is always a strong.
Can I flip the table?
He's like, is that okay? Go full Arnold. No, get out.
Try to get through this in fast, James. I'd like to answer the next one.
I know we did strong naming with the RC1 bits. I actually don't know the status of strong naming in the new .NET CLI world, whether or not they have that. I believe we've supported strong naming scenarios for RC1, and I assume we'll have it for RC2.
Last question, we got about 90 seconds. Why the decision to not support web forms in ASP.NET Core now or in the future?
Yeah, I'll take that one. The main reason we're not supporting web forms in .NET Core is, in ASP.NET Core, is to get all those perf benefits we talked about, we changed a bunch of the structures inside of ASP.NET. Things like the HTTP context object. If we put web form support back in, web forms would no longer look like the web forms it is today. And so you would have to port your application anyways. And so we came to a divide where it's like, what do we do? Do we port web forms to this and call it something else? Because it would not be backwards compatible with the other web forms. And once you have to decide you have to do a port, it really doesn't really matter if it's there or not, so in a lot of cases. So what we would tell customers is, .NET 4X is not going anywhere. It's part of Windows. It will continue to ship as part of Windows. We will continue to support it. And so WebForm customers should stay there. And if they want to build, MVC-style applications in the future, they should take a look at ASP.NET Core. But it would not be the same WebForms. And so I don't think there's a value in porting it for that reason.
Well, that's a good answer. I mean, it's the right technical answer. I mean,
but don't think it's going away. It's tech. We're still tooling. We're still supporting. With the .NET release that's coming out this week, there's some new ASP.NET features inside of there as well. We let you actually do the cache provider using async. We took some of the other membership providers and made them async as well. So we continue to,
All right.
Give some love there.
Well, I love it. Thanks so much. We're out of time. Again, we have the ASP.NET team here. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you on the flip side with Gabe Aoul coming up next.